Heading into the Netherlands-Argentina match, questions abounded due to injury and form. Would Louis van Gaal stick with the big three? Could the Dutch stop Messi? How would Argentina cope with the loss of Di Maria? Could Argentina keep Robin in check? In terms of lineups, Argentina with Zabaleta, Di Michaelis, Garay, and Rojo, and then Biglia and Mascherano in midfield, and Perez replaced Di Maria. De Jong was back into the Dutch side to partner Wijnaldum behind the attacking three of Robin, RVP, and Sneijder. Both teams were very deliberate throughout the match. Argentina tested the left side of the Dutch defense as Blind pressed forward and left space behind him. Haaland knocked the ball around, looking to get the ball in over the top for RVP and Robin. Tactically, Robin was on the right, and it appeared that De Jong was charged with marking, or at least staying close to Messi. For Argentina, Mascherano stayed very deep, splitting the center backs and shielding any transition moments. Higuain was solid to start, and he sent in Perez, who was stupidly taken down by Vlaar, but Messi's hard free kick was right at Cielison. Back to Robin. The Howler Dummy podcast spent a couple of minutes on the latest episode on Dutch gamesmanship, particularly Arjen Robin's quote-unquote diving. He's been battling his tag for years, but the panel made the note that this player is very direct. He goes at players and is lightning quick, and so defenders sometimes make mistakes and catch the player as he invites the contact. They also made the point that he should practice his diving, because he's not very good at it, i.e. the swan dives and rolling around. Totally agree with that last point. Look at the Mexico game. One instance he dove, in another moment a player goes for him, yet he rides the challenge, and then on the penalty incident, Marquez clearly fouls him, but he makes it far worse with the arching back and tumble. 4 years ago, I called Robin a choker after Champions League failings and his inability to see off Spain in the World Cup final. The last couple of years have changed my tune. He won the Champions League with Bayern Munich, scoring the winner, and has really carried the Dutch this far. Get rid of the diving, and I think a lot more fans would get on the bandwagon. On 26 minutes, Mascherano knocked heads with Wijnaldum, and lots of calls on Twitter for him to replace due to concussion concerns. At halftime, the ESPN panel briefly discussed the incident. Obviously, Taylor Twellman is pretty passionate on this topic due to his history, and he called for an independent determination in the future. At the interval, Mascherano stayed on the field, but Bruno Martins Indy was replaced by Jan Mott. That saw Cal go to the left wing, Jan Mott to the right wing, and the back three was formed by Blind, Vlaar, and De Vrij. Argentina saw little of the ball, but Higuain was able to find pockets of space. Kaut took to exploring the space that Blind saw in the first half, but teammates couldn't find him. RVP was isolated and virtually not involved in the game. De Jong went off on the hour mark for Classy. I immediately tweeted Alex Baker to see what kind of player he was. I asked if this was a straight swap, and Alex replied, No, 180 degrees, much more attacking. In the mold of Sneijder has been labeled the Dutch Xavi. Plays for Feyenoord and had a good season for them. With 15 minutes to go, it appeared that Higuain had opened the scoring, but he was offside. On second viewing, I think the AR got that one wrong. With 10 minutes to go, Sabella subbed in Palacio and Aguero for Perez and Higuain. Not sure if that was the right move. Thought Higuain was doing quite well, but in terms of team shape, the subs made sense. In injury time, Mascherano saved Argentina's bacon as Robin finally broke free, but the Barcelona player's desperate tackle blocked the shot. After 90 minutes of caginess, I wasn't looking forward to extra time. Huntelaar came in for a disappointing RVP, and Maxi Rodriguez came in for Lavezzi. Rat Tail had a chance to win the match, but headed into Cielison's hands, and Maxi Rodriguez's volley didn't really come off after Messi created the chance with a great individual effort. Netherlands went 5-for-5 on their penalties against Costa Rica, but would not be as successful again. Vlaar went first and missed. Messi scored, and then Robin answered. Garay put Argentina up 2-1. Sneijder went third, and Romero did well to get there to block the attempt. Aguero and Kaut both found the net, then Maxi Rodriguez beat Cielison to send Argentina through to the final. Overall, it was a lackluster game. The teams canceled each other out, and in tactical terms, it really was a chess match. Neither team took the major risks necessary to win the match, although the game opened up a little towards the end as fatigue set in. Messi had the freedom of the park in the second half, especially after De Jong went out, but just couldn't find the ball. Major props to Mascherano and Vlaar. Amazing effort by Mascherano as he was everywhere. Vlaar put in a wonderful shift in the back, organizing the defense and being strong in the tackle. One more kudo to Kaut, who put in a tremendous contribution this tournament in the defense and the attack. I found interesting takes on the managers of both teams. Tim Vickery looked at Sabella as a combination of Menotti and Bilardo. Menotti was the artistic liberal coach of the 1978 champions, while Bilardo was a pragmatic conservative coach of the 1986 champions. Sabella has reshaped the team during the tournament due to injuries and execution. Despite the attacking talent to choose from, he's moving closer to Bilardo's version of the team, organized, hard to break down, and focus on the singular talents of one player. Sunday will see if he can match both of his predecessors. As for the Netherlands, Raphael Honigstein noted that Louis van Gaal did the best with the team at his disposal. This version of the Orange was not a van Gaal team, but a fusion of old and young they took as far as he could. Honigstein mentioned that the team was a little poor each match as the veteran attacking stars slowly ran out of gas. No goals in 240 minutes of football is not a hallmark of van Gaal. Nevertheless, this team reached the World Cup semifinals and it will be up to Gus Hiddink to continue the work. Now for some news and notes. Past Soccer Nomad guest Scott Dane was on the Drive with Jack Ebling radio show Monday to talk about the growth of the game in the United States and some of the issues that confront the game here. Developing the soccer culture, developing the U.S. star, does the growth of the game depend on the performance of the United States, and routes of the U.S. player? Really good points from all involved, and I encourage you to search it out. Another point mentioned on the Howler Dummy podcast was the makeup of the crowds at the Brazil games and their lack of atmosphere. Rich, white crowds dominated the games for the host nation, which does not reflect the demographics of the country. Also, after the emotional national anthem, crowds tend to go quiet for long stretches as nerves and sometimes the lack of activity took over. As with the club game, the lower-class fan is being priced out, leaving the matches to be corporate events or a social outing. This is the world we live in, and I don't see it changing. For those watching on TV, Christopher Gaffney wrote a post on his GeoStadia blog, commenting on the FIFA coverage of the event, knowing their focus on violent moments, beautiful women, and key replays. He really put FIFA under the microscope, and his examination made me consider the pictures that I see for each match and also consider what I'm not seeing. One of the things that I'm not seeing is what is going on in the favelas. Mariana Van Zeller did a piece for fusion.soccer.net about watching two games with gangs in the favelas of Rio de Janeiro. These areas have not come under police control and are still run by drug lords, whose soldiers guard the perimeters and stay alert for police and enemy gangs. She watched the opening match against Croatia with a gang but was not able to tape. However, for the second game, she sat in front of a small TV with two gang soldiers loaded with machine guns and ammunition as Brazil survived against Chile. Very weird to watch them celebrate with guns slung across their backs. As soon as Chile missed their penalty kick, it was back out for patrols. A glimpse into a very different world. On a more positive note, she also generated a piece on the Favela World Cup in Salvador, Bahia. The competition was organized by the nonprofit Football Beyond Borders, which, according to their website, uses the power of football to tackle inequality and provide opportunities for young people to achieve their goals and make their voices heard. The tournament teams were made up of international fans and residents of nearby favelas. She also interviewed an American who came to Brazil to watch games but also volunteered as a referee at the event. Very uplifting story about how the game can have positive effects around the world. Just want to remind you about my blog and podcast. My blog is soccernomad.wordpress.com. The site is filled with posts about kits, books, soccer memories, and more. I recently wrote a post about the dramatic ending to the 1988-89 English First Division season, so I encourage you to give that a read. It's called Goals Galore. My regular podcast can be found at austinlong1974.podomatic.com or on iTunes. Just search Soccer Nomad. On that show, I interview fans and coaches about a wide range of subjects. Or you can find me on Twitter, at austinlong1974. Please contact me with any comments or questions. Not a great game yesterday, but now we can look forward to Germany versus Argentina. I'll be at Pepino's in East Lansing on Sunday for the game after the Lansing United DCFC match. Until then, ta-ta!